Imagine waking up tomorrow and realizing that the discomfort you felt in certain relationships wasn't your fault after all. What if that nagging sense that something's off when someone makes demands of your time, body, or emotions isn't you being too sensitive, but your innate boundary system functioning exactly as it should? Dr. Faith G. Harper's Unfuck Your Boundaries has become a cultural phenomenon precisely because it validates what many of us have suspected. Our boundaries matter, and the violation of them isn't just personally uncomfortable, it's politically significant. The book has garnered praise from mental health professionals and relationship experts alike, with figures like Esther Perel citing its accessible approach to a complex topic. What makes this work particularly relevant in our post-Me Too era is how it connects personal boundary violations to larger systems of power and control, offering both validation and practical tools for those navigating a world where no remains a revolutionary act. Boundaries mark the limits between what belongs to us and what belongs to someone else. They're not just about saying no to unwanted hugs or setting aside alone time. They're the fundamental architecture of all human relationships. Boundaries take countless forms, from the physical, please knock before entering my room, to the emotional, I need to process this news before discussing it further, to the intellectual, I don't want to debate politics at family gatherings. What makes boundaries so complex is that they're rarely one-size-fits-all propositions. They change across different relationships, evolve throughout our lives, and shift depending on context. The boundary you set with a romantic partner might differ dramatically from one you set with a colleague, and what felt comfortable last year might feel invasive today. Boundaries fall into seven main categories that often overlap in practice. Physical boundaries govern touch and personal space, everything from handshakes to sexual contact. Property boundaries concern our possessions and territorial instincts, like feeling irritated when someone borrows items without asking. Sexual boundaries extend beyond physical acts to include language, jokes, and information about our sexual selves. Emotional relational boundaries involve respecting others' personhood and not taking responsibility for their emotions. Intellectual boundaries protect our thoughts and ideas from dismissal or appropriation. Spiritual boundaries safeguard our belief systems and practices. Time boundaries protect how we allocate our minutes, hours, and days. The flexibility of our boundaries matters as much as the boundaries themselves. Rigid boundaries let nothing through and allow no negotiation, appropriate for fundamental safety issues like don't hit me, but potentially limiting in contexts where growth requires vulnerability. Permeable boundaries let everything through, essentially allowing others to define your limits. Flexible boundaries represent the ideal middle ground for most situations. They protect us while allowing growth and reasonable compromise. When we fail to set boundaries, resentment builds, eventually leading to relationship breakdown. Conversely, when we establish healthy boundaries, we create the conditions for authentic connection. The goal isn't to build impenetrable walls, but to create thoughtful filters that allow the right elements in while keeping harmful ones out. Our boundaries aren't just psychological constructs. They're physically wired into our brains. The amygdala, our brain's fear processing center, plays a crucial role in boundary recognition. When boundaries are threatened, this almond-shaped structure triggers our fight-slash-flight freeze response. Fight, confront the violation. Flight, escape the situation. Or freeze, become immobilized until danger passes. This isn't just theoretical. Modern brain imaging shows these processes in action. Research with patients who have damaged amygdalas reveals they lack normal physical boundary recognition, demonstrating that boundary awareness is literally hardwired into healthy brains. Our brains detect boundary violations even without conscious sensory cues, a pure survival instinct developed over millennia. Those gut feelings warning you about boundary violations, they're real physical responses transmitted through the vagus nerve via monoaminergic neurons. While your conscious mind processes only about 50 bits of the 11 million bits of data you receive each second, your subconscious attends to far more information. This creates visceral afferent messaging, inward feelings from the body telling the mind what to do. These gut reactions manifest physically, racing heart, tears welling up, chills, or breathing difficulties. Learning to recognize these bodily signals can literally save you from dangerous situations. However, trauma history or social conditioning might interfere with accurate interpretation of these signals. Someone raised in an environment where their boundaries were routinely violated might have learned to ignore these warning signs or misinterpret them as normal. Paying attention to these physical sensations, rather than dismissing them as being dramatic, is the first step toward establishing healthier boundaries. Your body often knows something's wrong before your conscious mind can articulate it. That discomfort you feel when someone stands too close or asks invasive questions isn't weakness. It's your boundary system functioning exactly as evolution designed it. If boundaries are natural and hardwired, why do so many of us struggle to establish and maintain them? The answer lies partly in how our societies are structured. Most human societies operate on what anthropologists call a dominator model, where hierarchies are maintained through force or threat of force. This power over structure creates ownership dynamics reinforced throughout culture, from families to workplaces to governments. These dynamics manifest in various ways, from parents claiming absolute authority over children, to employers expecting 24/7 availability from workers, to governments restricting individual freedoms in the name of order. When we establish boundaries, we become political revolutionaries by asserting our personhood deserves respect regardless of our position in social hierarchies. This revolutionary act challenges deeply embedded power structures that have existed for millennia. It's no coincidence that all equal rights movements began with boundary statements. Abolition: my body belongs to me, not to a slave owner. Voting rights: my voice deserves to be heard. Desegregation: I deserve equal access to public spaces. Marriage equality: my love deserves legal recognition. The women's rights movement, civil rights movement, and LGBTQ+ rights movement all fundamentally challenged existing power structures by asserting basic boundaries around human dignity and autonomy. While we're gradually shifting toward consent culture, normalizing asking for consent and respecting boundaries, we still predominantly live in what scholars call rape culture, a society that tolerates, excuses, and sometimes even condones sexual violence. In rape culture, no means maybe, and maybe means yes. This manifests in victim blaming, trivializing sexual assault, and perpetuating myths about consent. Consent culture, by contrast, means only yes means yes, and requires us to be responsible for our behavior at all times. This includes recognizing that consent must be enthusiastic, ongoing, and can be withdrawn at any time. The shift from power over to power with relationships represents a profound cultural evolution. This transformation is visible in modern parenting approaches that respect children's autonomy, workplace cultures that value work-life balance, and relationship models that emphasize mutual respect and clear communication. When we establish healthy boundaries, we're not just improving our individual lives, we're participating in a larger social transformation toward more equitable human connections. This includes challenging traditional authority structures, advocating for consent education in schools, and creating new models of leadership based on collaboration rather than domination. These changes ripple through society, affecting everything from intimate relationships to international diplomacy. By understanding boundaries as both personal and political, we can better appreciate their role in creating lasting social change and more just communities. Our earliest relationships create templates for how we approach boundaries throughout life. About 60% of people develop secure attachment. They're comfortable with others, able to depend on people and be depended upon with healthy, flexible boundaries. Around 20% develop avoidant attachment, difficulty trusting others, discomfort with closeness, and rigid boundaries that keep others at a distance. Another 20% develop anxious attachment, constant worry about being abandoned or unloved, craving closeness, and maintaining permeable boundaries to please others. Many people experience combinations of anxious and avoidant attachment, causing boundaries to fluctuate between rigid and permeable depending on which attachment issues are triggered. Someone might have rigid boundaries around their time, never allowing schedule changes, but permeable boundaries around their emotions, taking responsibility for others' feelings. While childhood attachment moderately correlates with adult patterns, the good news is these patterns aren't destiny. Mindfulness and recognition of these patterns can help rewire these reactions. Understanding your attachment style offers valuable insight into why certain boundary violations feel particularly triggering and provides a roadmap for healing. For example, if you have anxious attachment, you might struggle to maintain boundaries because you fear rejection if you say no. Recognizing this pattern allows you to practice setting small boundaries in safe relationships, gradually building confidence that maintaining healthy limits won't lead to abandonment. Similarly, if you have avoidant attachment, you might set overly rigid boundaries that prevent meaningful connection. Awareness helps you experiment with appropriate vulnerability in trusted relationships. When discussing boundary problems, we must acknowledge that some people are far more likely to create issues with relationship boundaries. Research indicates that approximately 15% of people have high conflict personalities, HCPs, individuals with reactive, adaptive behaviors that increase conflict rather than resolving it. These aren't intentionally manipulative people, but individuals whose worldview makes conflict seem like a viable option for getting needs met. Their patterns often emerge from early experiences that taught them these behaviors were necessary for survival or attention. HCPs are characterized by four distinct traits. First, they exhibit limited emotional self-control, feeling emotions with intense magnitude and being frequently dominated by negative emotions like anger, fear, or abandonment. Second, they demonstrate limited behavioral self-control, engaging in reactive behaviors designed to control others, such as excessive calling, emotional outbursts, or making threats. Third, they display black and white thinking, categorically labeling things, people, and situations as either entirely good or completely bad, with no capacity to see nuance or gray areas. Finally, they consistently externalize responsibility, viewing problems as external to themselves and habitually blaming others for their circumstances. People with permeable boundaries often attract HCPs because they'll absorb enough conflict that the HCP doesn't have to examine their own behavior or be accountable. This creates a dangerous dynamic where boundary violations become normalized and even expected within the relationship. Common examples include accepting repeated late-night crisis calls, tolerating verbal abuse under the guise of passion, or continuously making excuses for the HCP's behavior to others. Understanding high-conflict personalities helps us recognize when we're dealing with boundary issues that stem from the other person's patterns rather than our own communication failures. This knowledge doesn't excuse boundary violations, but provides context that can inform our response strategies. Effective responses might include setting firm, non-negotiable boundaries, maintaining detailed documentation of interactions, limiting direct contact, and utilizing support systems or professional help when needed. The impact of HCPs can be particularly severe in professional settings, family dynamics, and intimate relationships. They often create environments where others walk on eggshells, afraid to trigger conflict. Recognition of these patterns is crucial for breaking cycles of boundary violation and establishing healthier relationship dynamics. It's important to note that while HCPs may benefit from therapeutic intervention, the responsibility for managing their impact on others ultimately lies with them, not their targets. While high-conflict behaviors are reactive, coercive control represents something more sinister, the strategic application of boundary violations to control another person. Unlike high-conflict behaviors, coercive control is calculated, rational, and ongoing. Individuals who engage in it seek measurable material and social benefits by systematically breaking down another person's sense of self. Dr. Evan Stark, who coined the term in 2007, found coercive control present in up to 80% of abusive relationships, with only 20% defined purely by physical violence. As physical abuse became more socially unacceptable, abusers shifted to these mind game tactics that can be harder to identify but equally devastating. Controlling individuals set the stage by targeting vulnerable people, positioning themselves as rescuers, creating indebtedness, and systematically cutting off support systems. They may rescue victims financially or love bomb them with attention when they're desperate, gradually ensuring more attachments to themselves and fewer to others. Warning signs include controlling contact with others, demanding passwords, tracking movements, making demands about where you go and with whom, monitoring activities, controlling resources, threatening harm, and destroying property. More subtle red flags include being rude to your friends and family, preventing you from spending time with others without them, avoiding accountability, requiring constant contact, making inappropriate jokes about your appearance or identity, and holding double standards. A simple but powerful tool for identifying potential controllers is the no test, observing how someone responds the first time you tell them no. While disappointment is normal, attempting to force a yes or arguing against your decision signals potential control issues. Healthy individuals might express disappointment, but ultimately respect your boundary without punishment or manipulation. Understanding your own boundaries is the essential first step toward healthier relationships. This exploration can bring up surprising feelings or even panic, especially if you were raised in an environment that didn't emphasize boundary awareness. Many people discover that their boundary difficulties stem from childhood experiences where their limits weren't acknowledged or respected. Start by examining each boundary type: physical, property, sexual, emotional, relational, intellectual, spiritual, and time, and determine if your boundaries in each area tend to be rigid, flexible, or permeable. Identify specific issues within each category that you want to address. For example, with physical boundaries, consider your comfort level with handshakes, hugs, or personal space in different contexts. For emotional boundaries, reflect on how easily you share personal information or take on others' emotional states. Pay particular attention to your gut reactions and bodily responses rather than focusing solely on intellectual answers. Your body often knows your boundaries before your mind can articulate them. Notice physical sensations like tension in your shoulders, a knot in your stomach, or shallow breathing when boundaries are crossed. A meditation practice can help connect with these authentic boundary needs that might be overlooked through purely cognitive reflection. Even 5 minutes of daily body scanning can dramatically improve your awareness of boundary violations. Next, examine patterns in how people respond to your boundaries by asking two key questions. Which people respect your communicated boundaries, and what do they have in common? Which people don't respect boundaries, and what patterns do they share? Keep a journal to track these interactions and look for recurring themes. You might notice that certain personality types, relationship dynamics, or situational contexts consistently challenge your boundaries. If most people don't respect your boundaries, you might need to examine your communication style. Are you being clear and direct? Are you using I statements? Are you following through with consequences when boundaries are crossed? However, if specific relationships present boundary problems, you might be dealing with difficult individuals or toxic environments. Before assuming malice, consider whether health issues, neurodiversity, mental health challenges, or other factors might be affecting the other person's ability to recognize or respect boundaries. Practice setting small boundaries in low-stakes situations to build confidence. This might include declining additional responsibilities at work, saying no to social invitations when you need rest, or expressing preferences about communication methods. Pay attention to how different boundary-setting approaches affect both you and others, and adjust your strategy accordingly. Remember that boundary work is an ongoing process of refinement and adjustment. As your self-awareness grows and life circumstances change, your boundaries may need to evolve. Regular check-ins with yourself about boundary satisfaction can help maintain healthy relationships and personal well-being. Communication is the practical mechanism for establishing boundaries and consent. We often nurse hurt feelings that could have been prevented through clear communication. By consciously changing our communication patterns, we can better recognize, uphold, and communicate boundaries. Three primary communication styles correlate with boundary types. Aggressive communication correlates with rigid boundaries, characterized by interrupting others, dismissing their opinions, and constantly reinforcing one's own rightness. The meta message is, I'm important and you're not. Passive communication aligns with permeable boundaries, marked by not expressing wants and needs, deferring to others, and self-deprecation. The meta message is, you're important and I'm not. Assertive communication connects to flexible boundaries, involves firmly holding one's beliefs while still respecting differing viewpoints. The meta message is, we're both important even when we disagree. For more effective boundary communication, use a simple three-part formula. I feel, when you, what I want is. This approach encourages taking responsibility for one's feelings rather than blaming others or expecting mind reading. While this structured communication feels awkward at first, it helps take ownership of feelings while clearly requesting boundary-respecting behaviors. Rather than just saying no, expressing what you actually want creates more options for dialogue. Compare these responses to, how about sushi for dinner? Ugh, no, just rejection. I'm really in the mood for a hamburger. We could go there or grab takeout from both places. The second approach requires vulnerability but creates possibilities for mutual satisfaction. While a firm no is perfectly acceptable, expressing what you do want can transform understanding. For handling conflict without existing trust, the BIF response method works well. Brief, don't overexplain. Informative, focus on accurate facts. Friendly, remain civil without matching hostility. Firm, be clear without inviting further discussion. When even the best communication techniques fail with certain people, try protective strategies like the pane of glass trick, imagining a barrier that blocks emotional impact, or the gray rock method, making yourself as boring and non-responsive as possible to deprive boundary violators of the emotional reactions they seek. After examining our own boundaries, we must consider how we respond to others' boundaries, a crucial but often overlooked aspect of healthy relationships. This requires honest self-reflection through specific questions. Do people consistently feel safe sharing vulnerable information with you? Do you maintain deep, authentic connections over time? Do your relationships tend to last or fade quickly? What particular situations or triggers make respecting others' boundaries especially challenging for you? Nobody enjoys rejection, but accepting no gracefully is fundamental for respecting others' boundaries. When someone establishes a limit, how we respond reveals much about our emotional maturity and relationship skills. Try these four research-backed strategies. 1. Acknowledge your feelings with self-compassion rather than suppressing them. Notice if you feel hurt, angry, or disappointed, and allow yourself to experience these emotions without judgment. For example, you might say to yourself, "It's natural to feel disappointed when my friend can't attend my event." 2. Put no in proper perspective. Recognize it's usually rejection of a specific request or offer, not your entire personhood. Someone declining an invitation doesn't negate your worth or the overall relationship. 3. Recognize the boundary you've encountered and learn from it. Consider what this boundary reveals about the other person's needs, values, or circumstances. Use this information to better understand them and adjust future interactions. 4. Communicate understanding without wheedling or pouting. Respond with phrases like, "I understand," or "Thanks for being honest with me," rather than trying to change their mind or showing passive-aggressive disappointment. The STFU technique offers practical guidance for respectful communication in any interaction. Share time. Divide conversation time equally, being mindful not to dominate discussions. Notice if you're talking more than listening. 3 seconds. Count to three during pauses before speaking. This prevents interrupting and allows others to fully express their thoughts. Find empathy. Listen for both content, what's being said, and context, emotions, circumstances, and underlying needs. Pay attention to tone, body language, and what isn't being said. The STFU technique offers practical guidance for respectful communication in any interaction. Share time. Divide conversation time equally, being mindful not to dominate discussions. Notice if you're talking more than listening. 3 seconds. Count to three during pauses before speaking. This prevents interrupting and allows others to fully express their thoughts. Find empathy. Listen for both content, what's being said, and context, emotions, circumstances, and underlying needs. Pay attention to tone, body language, and what isn't being said. Understanding is not necessary, except that you don't always need to get someone else's perspective to respect it. Different experiences and viewpoints are valid, even if they don't align with yours. Implementing these practices requires consistent effort and self-awareness. Regular check-ins with yourself about how well you're honoring others' boundaries can help identify areas for improvement. Remember that respecting boundaries isn't just about following rules. It's about creating an environment where relationships can thrive through mutual trust and respect. We've all violated boundaries and had our own boundaries violated. Guilt isn't a sign of irredeemability, but a signal that work needs to be done, knowing better and committing to doing better through accountability. True accountability means accepting responsibility for harm caused and repairing it. This involves listening non-defensively to others' experiences, examining our patterns, and breaking cycles of toxic behavior. Genuine apologies avoid justifications, "I'm sorry, but," and instead take full ownership with language of accountability. Accountability also means respecting when someone doesn't want your apology, recognizing that sometimes our desire to apologize serves our needs more than theirs. The healing journey involves identifying specific positive behaviors to develop, understanding personal motivations, and creating actionable steps for change. The author shares a powerful story about her father in early recovery doing painful knuckle push-ups at his AA sponsor's instruction. When the pain became unbearable, he finally stood up and declared, "Fuck you, I don't have to do this," to which his sponsor calmly replied, "No shit." This anecdote captures the book's central message. Regardless of our past conditioning or current circumstances, we always have the power to make choices that serve our best interests. The vision is a world where discussing our boundaries, needs, and consent becomes as normal as talking about the weather. While achieving this evolutionary shift requires massive personal and societal change that might feel overwhelming, the work begins with determining what we truly want in life and how to communicate those desires while respecting others. What started as a book on boundaries has become a manifesto for changing the world, and you absolutely can do this. No shit.